accession number 18259, Reel 2.
Reel 2.
And there was a boss on the end of your rifle, and on your bayonet there was a ring so far down the handle, and there was also a catch at the top of the handle, actually, and the boss, the ring used to go onto the boss of your rifle, and the catch used to clip onto another part of the rifle a little further down. At the, you know, that was how it was fastened on, you see. And when that was done, put his arm up again or something, and then you used to pull it down and everyone pulled the rifle to the side, you know. All done in a real smooth, nice military fashion, you see. And there was this occasion we went on mounted guard at Windsor Castle, and marched from Victoria Barracks. And so far along, you used to get the order to change arms. From your left shoulder to your right shoulder. And that was just for a bit of a rest, you know. And we did this going along. And then changed arms back to the normal position. Left arm. Marched into the castle, into the forecourt of the, just front of the guard room, you know. Well, we both, you meet the old guard then. You know, the guards were lined up waiting for you coming in, you see. Of course, you have the band playing and all this. Then the old guard, the new guard, halts facing the old guard, you see. And then you turn to your front and you both guards are still facing one another. The officers in the front of each guard. And then you do the ceremonial bit about... they were all standing at ease at that time. No, they were brought up to attention. It was the bit to present arms. You see, you have to present arms. And I think they'd presented first. And, of course, we'd gone on with the new colour. And we had to present arms. I remember I presented. And the last motion of this present arms... you wouldn't believe it, my bayonet came off. Well, there's a rule in the guard, anything wrong, it has to stay that way, you know, you're no fiddling about, and if you, I used to say, right or wrong, stand still, you know, don't start bending down and picking. So you had to carry on just as if nothing had happened, you see. You know. And anyhow, when it came to holding arms and standing at ease, the officer, he dropped just behind him, actually. He just bent down and picked it up. Looked at me and said, this is yours, he says. And, of course, I was really embarrassed. Anyhow, it went off, and then that cost me, I think, a few extra drills. That was your punishment, you see. For any misdemeanors, you see, you used to get... If they were too serious a misdemeanor, you used to get what was called extra drills.
So you just hadn't fixed it on tightly enough?
It hadn't been fastened on tightly enough. But it surprised me to think that it had stayed on, you know, all that time, all march along. How we'd changed arms also like that. But I suppose it was the best place for it to have fallen off, really. I don't know. If it was going to fall off, it was probably the best place for it to have fallen off.
Were the bayonets very sharp?
Oh yes, they were, and they were long. They were a big 12-inch bayonet, you know, these the old-fashioned First World War bayonets. Yes, and clank to the ground. Good heavens! Anyway, I'll say I was reported, and I can't remember going in front of the COs, but I now got some drills. I think it was about five. You said you should put about five extra drills, and that meant that. When we had defaulters parade in the battalions at 3:30 each afternoon, and anyone who was on defaulters, you would have to go on to this parade at 3:30 to do your extra drills, you see. And he used to have one of the full sergeants, one of the drills. No, not usually. It was one of the drill, a full sergeant or a land sergeant. Used to take this squad, drill you, chase you around the barracks. And when I say chase you, they used to chase you. They used to have you doubling. And also on this 3:30 parade, if any other thing that had happened, when you were inspected, you were inspected every time you went on parade, whatever it was, you know, even if you were going on to a parade where you were cleaning or something, that fatigue, you know. You still had to be, you were inspected, and you had, your turnout had to be just spot on, regardless. We used to wear a canvas trousers and jacket, and light white. In fact, they used to go, when they used to go to the laundry that afternoon, they were almost white, and we had a row of buttons on, brass buttons, you see. And that used to be our fatigue dress with our boots and our forage caps. But everything had to be bang on, smart and creased, you know. And anything that you were, what we used to call stopped, by whoever was inspecting you, had to be shown on this 3:30 parade I spoke about, you see. So it wasn't only defaulters that went on the parade, it was people going on showing do things clean or whatever, you see. Could be anything. Cap badge was dirty, or just depending what the person was who was inspecting you, you know, and what he thought about you. It could be your boots, it could be whatever, your rifle sling, your webbing, because they say we wore white, you know, with a red tunic, you know, proper full guard order. And we had a lot to do, a lot to clean. You know, and keep it clean, you know. White buff belts and braces, and we had our greatcoats. We had them packed into a square to fit on your shoulders. So that you've probably seen the old guard order. You know. And the cape used to have to be rolled, and that fitted across the middle of your back. Just with buckles and straps, all had to be blancoed and brass. And these rolls, they had to be properly rolled as well. You know, it had to be like a proper a proper chocolate roll. And they used to take some time to do. Oh, you used to spend hours and hours getting them perfect, you know. And as I say, on this 3:30 parade, you had to, anything went wrong, it had to be shown on there, you see. He'd have an officer come along and sergeant. He used to be the orderly sergeant, or what we used to call a sergeant in waiting, who used to take charge of the parade. And he used to see what you were there for, and he used to come along with the officer and inspecting them. And if everything was all right, well, he'd put a marker against your name in the book, and that was, you were finished. But in addition to that, you always had the added thing of having stopped something else you was wearing, you see what I mean? So you could go on one day and you could be going on for a week. you'd maybe take a pair of boots on to be shown clean. They say, oh, that's very good. Like, but what about stones? Oh, dear. And so they say, right, but show that clean tomorrow. That's what, and that's but it was all this, a lot of it seemed irrelevant, but it was all good. It was discipline in my mind, and it taught you to be, you know, what was right from wrong. And I did enjoy it, really.
But why did you enjoy all this? Didn't you find it tiresome?
I didn't really. It was, I don't know, I liked it. I suppose there were times when I was a bit browned off with it, but on the main, I really enjoyed it.
What did you like about ceremonial so much?
I think it was the fact that you could show yourself off, I think, is that the word? You see?
Display.
Display. And we always used to try, and as I say, do and look your best. And that's how it's gone on through my life. Through life, you had the people looking at you, the public, and you wanted to present yourself to them as something good, you know. And that's what I used to like about it.
Did you get the impression that the public appreciated the talent?
Absolutely, yes.
How would they show their appreciation?
Oh, very often by clapping you and things, you know. I've had them clap as I've gone. When I did Buckingham Palace Guard at that time, they don't do it now. We used to stand there, our sentry boxes were outside of the palace on the pavement, you know, outside of the gates. You've seen them now, they're inside. But we used to have them on the outside of the gates, you see. And you're in contact with the public, you see. You could just shake the hands if you so felt so much like it. Never did, of course. But they used to come along and stand by you and photographs taken, you know, all this bit. And then we'd do our march up and down. We used to have a signal. If you were a double sentry, that was. Some most times single sentry. But when the Queen was in residence, we used to have the King, whatever then. We used to have double sentries on, you see. And this was all, we did all this training in the on the Barrack Square, you know, beforehand. And the right-hand man used to take control of when we used to do our marching up and down. He used to tap the ground with his butt of his rifle. Not too loud, but enough for you to hear, you know, for the left-hand man to hear. He'd be standing there and then he'd just tap. Then you knew then that you it depended, one tap, and you were going to have a walk, you see. And then what you used to do then, of course, was to take a pace forward, because you had to do that, so you could clear the sentry box with your bayonet, you see. If you didn't take your first step forward, you'd put the bayonet into the top of the sentry box, you see. So we'd take this step forward, and it was all done by 2-3 then, from then. You first start with the tap of the butt, 2-3 forward, 2-3 slope arms, you see, 2-3, then you turn inwards to one another, you see, and then you knew just how many paces you had to go towards one another. You knew how many paces to do it. You both turn round at the same time, go to the other end of your patrol, turn round again, come marching toward. And it was all, and it looked so effective, you know, so professional. And then, if we wanted to stop when it came, you thought, oh, well, we're, you know, doing enough walking. The right hand man, he used to point one finger like that, as he walked along. And then you knew then that that was your signal to stop.
Outside. Point one finger downwards.
One down. So he walked along with his swinging the arm, you know. You had your rifle piercing. There's one finger. And then you'd see that and you used to stop outside his sentry box, turn, do, and then come to slope your, you know. Stand easy. No, not stand easy, just stand face, you see. You ordered your arms and then stood at ease. If it was a question of saluting, you used to use two fingers or two taps on the butt. Say this right-hand man saw there was an officer approaching. Anyway, you'd give two taps on the butt. And you knew then that you used to do the same drill, two steps forward and slope your arms and then a salute. That was a salute with your arm across the front of you, you know, on the butt of your rifle. That was for the for it's a load, you see. And it would be the same. It would be the same if you were marching along, coming to the toward your sentry box. When you got to your sentry box, if you were showing two fingers, you used to halt, turn to your front, and then salute. But you did both together. So it was, and people used to think, no, that bad. Whoever to do it like that, you know. It was, but it was all this, all the training that we had. And with the present arms, it was a full hand. It was a show of full hand like that.
With all the fingers.
All the fingers out there. Then you knew very well that it was a present arms coming up, you see. And that was the signals we used to use between the sentries, you see, on there. Yeah.
Were the rifles loaded?
Oh, no. No, we never had any ammunition with this. No. It was all ceremonial. Yeah.
So if there was a threat to
if
the
there was a
family,
threat, if there was a threat, if there was a threat, well, I think it was the police. You know, you always had the police on the gates, and I think that was something that would have been taken over by them. You know,
did ever such a thing occur?
No, not in my knowledge. No. The only thing we could have done was to have used our bayonets, if anything. But no, nothing like that arose in. But there was always policemen on the gates, you know. And I would imagine if there'd been anything, they would know what to do, what to have done.
Would you have been formidable with a bayonet? Did you know how to use it well?
Oh, yes, we used to. Yes, we used to do it. It was in our training. It was this bayonet training. We used to do it with... a big trestle. I mean, and sandbag. Not sandbag, a bag of straw. The size of a body. And we used to do our bayonet training on there, you see, and these things, yeah.
Did the, on the palace guards, did the public ever interfere with you or cause a nuisance to you?
The only time, I don't think I had any real problem. Only the crowds, actually, just the crowds at times. They used to get a little bit on your nerves sometimes coming up in photographs taken, you know. But what we used to do, he used to say, oh, well, I know what I'll do now, I'm going to scatter these crowd here. And he used to come to attention, you know, quickly. If you wanted, you couldn't do it if you were double sentry, of course, because you had to be guarded by your other man. Come to attention quickly and take a step forward quickly with your big ammo boots, and that used to make them shift. Yeah, they used to get out of the way then. Yeah. But I never had no intimidation. It was just that the crowds. I remember being on there one morning, quite early, and it was an England-Scotland football. It was the old soldiers used to seem to have it at that same time of the year. I don't know why. And the jocks came up, you know, for Wembley. Well, of course, you could imagine they coming in at all times of the early morning, you know, and of course, where they wanted to be, so have a look at Buckingham Palace, and it was absolutely crowded, you know. And you were there trying to patrol, you just couldn't, you just had to stand there. As I said, they're all having the photographs taken with you. But I never had anyone really do me any damage or anything, that injury. They just seemed a little bit of a nuisance sometimes.
Did the royal family ever take any interest in the guardsmen?
The occasion I do remember is at Windsor, and I saw the present Queen and Princess Margaret. I was on the front of the castle as you go, you know, Windsor Castle. I go up the slope to the gate at the front of you before you turn left into the castle. You know. And I was on sentry there. There's a sentry box there, and I was there one evening, and they came round. I don't know if they take any interest in me, really, or not, but they came round, and they were on tricycles with a nanny with them. And I was patrolling just along. You did a short patrol along there in the front of this gate. And I saw them both in there, just cycling along on this path, just inside the castle gates. They just looked, but nothing said. But I've never had say that they took any real interest in us, only trumping the colour, of course, when the Queen has a... She's very interested and likes to know just how things are, and I think if there's any complaints, she certainly makes them. She, if there's anything she thinks isn't right, so I'm told.
Was there any rivalry with other groups of, other battalions of foot guards like the Grenadiers and so on?
No, well, when we say it's, there's a friendly rivalry, and it all, it exists to this day. Yeah. You always say you were the best. Yeah.
Did you have nicknames for each other?
Well, we used to call them the mix, with the Irish guards, the mix, and the jocks, of course. And the Taffy, just, you know, and the Bill Browns, we used to call the Grenadiers, Bill Browns, you see.
What did the Grenadiers call you?
What they used to call us, the Lilywhites. We were the Lilywhites, with the call streamers.
Why is that, so. Why was that?
Well, it's from our white rose, Yorkshire rose, I'd imagine. That's how it arisen, you know. That's how we are, a Yorkshire battalion, really, is the call stream. And we wear our Yorkshire rose on our lapels, on our uniform, you see. And I think that is where it's the Lilywhites originated from.
Mm. And why did you call them the...
The Bill Browns. Now then, I don't know really where that, how that originated, the Bill Browns. I'm sure, but that's what we used to call them. Yeah. But there's all this, as I say, this friendly rivalry, but together... They're old guardsmen, old mates, you know.
What were relations like between the foot guards and the horse guards?
They were quite good. They were good, yes, very good. Yes, we used to call those the donkey wallopers, you know. That was our favourite name. It's something I didn't really like. They used to call them the donkey wallopers. But we still do, you know. We go to these meetings of, and, you know, I go across to Louth, and it's... association over there is a mixture, and we've got horse guards, blues and royals, and life guards. And there's I don't think there's an Irishman there. No, there's been, oh yes, there's an Irish guardsman. It's a Welshman, there isn't there now. We have the others, Scotland, all in this association, and we all rib one another, you know. But it's all friendly. It's all friendly. But when it comes down to it, we have all the same basic training. Everything is, there's nothing done that is just different to us. You know,
any other anecdotes from pre-war?
From pre-war, no. Let me see now then. No, not other than, as I say, I spoke about being adopted by my... I had two brothers who I saw some years later. They were in a home, apparently. This aunt of mine adopted me, as I say, my aunt and my uncle. And I had two brothers. They were taken into a home, apparently. No, there's... not much at all about the pre-war business. I just, as I say, I worked as a driver of these horses for this firm of brewers, bottlers, you see.
Right, well, let's go on to the war then. So once war broke out, how did that affect you?
Well, of course, we were mobilised straight away. And I think... We were in France in about 14 days, I think, if I remember rightly.
Which battalion of the Coles Rangers?
I was with the second battalion. You know, the second battalion all the time, apart from when I went to the Middle East. But I was with the second battalion then, at Aldershot. And we did some quite... Time was Aldershot, really. We did the Aldershot tattoo, you know, at Aldershot, which was very, very good. And that was done on the Rushmore Arena. If you know, it's a big spot there. And we did this Aldershot tattoo, and this would be mid 39, summer of 39, and we were issued with our different clothing, you know. The theme was Queen Elizabeth on the bowling green at Plymouth Hoe, you know, with Sir Walter Raleigh, and that was the theme of the of this tattoo. And we were all issued with different uniforms of that period. And I always remember we were in this big barrack room with all this gear arrived, getting fitted out for, you know, for these different uniforms. And you could imagine amongst a group of soldiers what was going on. Such laughs and fun getting ourselves. My uniform, I was a yeoman of the guard. One of my first uniforms I put on. And with so many others, of course. And then I had the uniform also of what was known at those days as an halberdier. Now he was a swordsman, a lance man was this halberdier. I think they used to stand behind the musketry men when they fire, and then whilst they were reloading, they sort of took control of anything that was happening in the front with the big long spear. If your history can tell you anything different, it's. And we had these uniforms all made up, you know, made up with breastplates, you know, like cardboard breastplates, not and helmets, but they were very, very authentic. Looked very authentic, and then we had these long pikes, you know. And I know when the tattoo opened. By the mass bands of the guards coming in at either end, and it was a magnificent sight, you know, and extraordinary to read. It just happened at night, you know, beautiful. And then we used to do our little bit. I remember we used to, I don't know just what we did, but I know we walked around in this, you know, a beefeater's uniform, or yeoman of the guard uniform, to be correct. And then in the halberdier's uniform. And we also did a display of firing display with coloured lights and things like that. We had used to have a bowl, something fitted like you used to put a grenade in. The rifles used to have a little bowl you could fit on the end of a rifle and a grenade to put in anything like that. And we were dressed then in, we had sort of white waiter's jackets, you know, waiters. No blue trousers and white peak cap, you know, forage cap. And we did this drill display and did this firing all at the same time, you know, which looked, actually about to look very effective from the spectator's point of view. And then the laughter, part the laugh out of you. I was speaking to one of our chappies not so very long ago, because I've met very few since the war Very few of the chappies were served with, a lot of them killed now and then. But I came across one, and I heard him say about the Aldershot tattoo. This is that. So I went and had a word with him. And he remembered it well, and now laughs we used to have. And down in Aldershot, at the bottom of Gun Hill, it's an Aldershot, a bit of a hill at the bottom, there's a barracks all over the place, you know.